It's Tuesday, July 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, a historic nuclear deal between world powers and Iran has been reached.
This deal demonstrates that American diplomacy can bring about real and meaningful change. Change that makes our country and the world safer and more secure.
American Muslims fight negative stereotypes of Islam, and the Grateful Dead rock group bids farewell after performing for a half century. It's all ahead. As we heard, the United States, Britain, China, France, Russia, and Germany today announced an agreement with Iran on its nuclear program. U.S. President Barack Obama spoke at the White House.
This deal demonstrates that American diplomacy can bring about real and meaningful change. Change that makes our country and the world safer and more secure. This deal is also in line with a tradition of American leadership. It's now more than 50 years since President Kennedy stood before the American people and said, "Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate." He was speaking then about the need for discussions between the United States and the Soviet Union, which led to efforts to restrict the spread of nuclear weapons. In those days, the risk was a catastrophic nuclear war between two superpowers. In our time, the risk is that nuclear weapons will spread to more and more countries, particularly in the Middle East, the most volatile region in our world. Today, because America negotiated from a position of strength and principle, we have stopped the spread of nuclear weapons in this region.
That is U.S. President Obama. I'm joined now by International Edition's Jeffrey Young and by Heather Murdoch, who's in Vienna, and she's in the briefing room with U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, where the agreement was announced. Heather, what is known about the components of this deal?
Well, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry did speak in some detail about the deal, but mostly he talked about the results of the deal as opposed to the very technical details of how it would work. He spoke very strongly, saying this would mean that Iran, which is currently, or at least during the before the negotiations, a few months away from having enough material to build 10 bombs, this is what he said, it will now, for the next 10 years, remain only a full year away from having even the materials to build a single bomb.
All right. Jeff, what is known about the major sticking points in this process?
Well, first of all, we know that the Iranians were steadfast against military inspections. They have some facilities such as Parchin, which are suspected of having been used for, on Parchin's part, developing the possibility of triggers, what sets off a nuclear weapon. And as a matter of fact, they dismantled and basically razed the site. I wanted to bring up something with Heather that Secretary of State Kerry said that really struck me when he said, "We will make clear to them how we can work together to resolve issues in the Middle East." Heather, did you get a sense that beyond the nuclear deal that perhaps Secretary Kerry was opening the door for discussions beyond that, for maybe the very beginnings of rapprochement with the Islamic Republic? Or did I hear incorrectly? What's your sense of this?
I very much got that sense. About halfway through his speech, he paused and he said, "Let's be clear, I'm not quoting him exactly, but he said, "Let's be clear, we are not having any quarrel with the Iranian people and that we realize how deeply the sanctions have harmed your people." And this, I think, to an Iranian audience, is something they wanted to hear. Like, I believe Iranian people in general feel like they don't want to be isolated anymore, and a warmer relations with the U.S. would be a positive step for them, but they also want an end to the pain being caused by sanctions.
Heather, is it known how this nuclear deal, how will this be verified?
The nuclear deal in terms of the IAEA inspections or in terms of the politics?
In terms of the inspections?
Well, I think it's quite complicated. They have what's called an additional protocol to the non-proliferation treaty that Iran has agreed to sign on to, which means, as far as I know, it will be the most stringent nuclear inspections that ever have been put into place in history. So what we're looking at going forward is inspections in all of Iran's military sites, declared and also undeclared. The international community will have the opportunity, if they suspect a site is being used to develop nuclear weapons, they will have the opportunity to go and visit it. They will, before they visit it, have to alert Iran, and there will be some negotiations. But on some cases, they will also be able to do this with very little notice. Also, they stress that in this particular inspection system, they will be inspecting the entire supply chain for nuclear materials in Iran, which will make it less likely that any clandestine weapons could be built without the international community knowing it, because it would also mean building an entire supply chain clandestinely, which would be very difficult.
Well, if you wanted to look at a model of what intrusive inspections look like, you can go back to Iraq in 10, 15 years ago when we sent inspectors such as the man from Texas, David Kay, was sent to Iraq to look for weapons of mass destruction. And these were intrusive. He would show up and say, open up the gates, open up the doors, I want to see it. So there is the probability that these will be indeed intrusive, meaning that the IAEA will show up at a site, and even if they're warned in advance, they're not looking for any locked doors. They're not looking for any, sorry, you can't see this. Intrusive inspection means when they show up, they want to see what is there, and they want to report it back to the IAEA.
Heather, this deal seemed to follow it did follow days of intense negotiations. The participants of this have been under really great pressure within the past few days in this whole process.
Yes, it's been a long haul. Initially, the date set for the Vienna talks to conclude was June 30th. Most people arrived here around June 26th, and negotiators have been working day and night. The press has also been by their side day and night. And four deadlines have gone by. The last deadline was last night, so it didn't go by very long. But just even the other day, Javad Zarif, the Iranian foreign minister, came out onto his balcony, and when the journalist screamed up, you know, how are you, what's going on, he just said he's tired and overworked.
Yes, and we should also note that this the announcement of this was made not only in Vienna, but also in Iran itself and in Persian.
Yes, this is going to be a very large deal for the people of Iran. And even for the Iranian journalists here, they find it to be a very personal event in which their families are watching their work every minute of every day, it seems.
Has there been any discussion yet, at least in public, about Israel's potential reaction to this?
Well, Benjamin Netanyahu has spoken out against this deal very strongly, saying it, in fact, will do the opposite of what it intends to do. It will make it more likely that Iran will build a bomb. I think I've also heard that Netanyahu has been sent a copy of the deal already and has said that experts are reviewing it.
And we have reaction already. Heather, I'm looking at a story right now that was just handed to me. Dateline Jerusalem. Uh-huh. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu furiously denounced a deal to limit Iran's nuclear program, calling it a historic mistake for the world, accusing the United States and the five other global powers of making what he calls far-reaching concessions in order to achieve an agreement, in his words, at any price. In addition, he said, talking about the expected lifting of sanctions, to quote Netanyahu, Iran will receive hundreds of billions of dollars with which it can fuel its terror machine and its expansion and aggression throughout the Middle East and across the globe. It was just yesterday I saw an article that was published in the Times of Israel by Dori Gold, the Israeli foreign minister, and he made it clear that Israel plans to be very active in Washington on Capitol Hill to make its points known, to make its voice known to members of Congress. Congress has 60 days now to review this agreement and decide if they're going to support it or not. And it's very clear that there are going to be forces both for and against it that are going to be fully involved in the discussion when this all moves to Washington. And again, because the deal took longer then July the 9th, it went over. It triggered, instead of 30 days review by Congress, it's now 60 days.
Yes, okay. Well, thank you very much. That's Jeffrey Young, and my thanks as well to Heather Murdoch, who joined us from Vienna. Well, meanwhile, VOA's William Gallo spoke with Trita Parsi, the president of the National Iranian American Council and author of A Single Roll of the Dice, Obama's Diplomacy with Iran.
This is a pretty historic agreement, and we haven't had time to read all the details yet, but what is your initial reaction?
As you mentioned, this is absolutely historic, and it does show that diplomacy can achieve so much more than having a militant foreign policy. I think President Obama deserves a tremendous amount of credit, mindful of the fact that he pursued this path of diplomacy in spite of the conventional wisdom in Washington, which essentially said that diplomacy doesn't work, you only have to use force or coercive measures. And by the way, the Iranians would never be interested in striking a deal anyways.
And now there are a lot of people opposed to this deal, and we've only seen really the beginning of what that opposition will look like. I'm sure we'll see all the statements come out today of the reasons why this won't work. Why do you think this will work?
I think because the political and geopolitical interests are aligned in a very compatible way right now. And the fact that the deal and the diplomacy that has produced it has been such that it actually has ensured that everyone gets something out of this deal. There's a win for every side in this arrangement. And as a result, they would like to continue to enjoy the deal because they're gaining something.
Now, how is this deal being perceived by the public in Iran, and how much of a difference do you think it'll make for Iranian people who've suffered under international sanctions for so long?
Well, the public, based on the opinion polls that have been made, as well as on their reaction to the political framework agreement in April of this year, clearly back this and are going to be absolutely overjoyed, and I'm sure we're going to see some very, very interesting images of celebrations on the streets of Iran. The people will obviously be very eager to see the sanctions lifted because they have suffered tremendously under these sanctions, combined with the incompetence and mismanagement of the Iranian government itself.
Now, obviously, the next big obstacle here is clearing this deal through the U.S. Congress. They'll have 60 days to approve it. What are the chances that this gets rejected by U.S. Congress?
As things are looking right now, the deal is that the president is in a good position, but we have 60 days of review. There's going to be a lot of arguments. There's going to be a lot of political interest. This is all coinciding with the Republican primaries as well, which has made this a more politicized issue than it otherwise would have been. And there may also be developments in the region that could complicate matters. So it is in that sense not a done deal. The president will have to work very, very hard to get this through Congress.
Now, this is being seen as a major foreign policy achievement for Barack Obama. And what do you think the chances are that it is more than just what is being discussed in this deal, that it will lead to some kind of new era of U.S.-Iran relations? Is that kind of overstating this?
I don't think so. I think the probability that this will be transformational is quite significant. Now, it will not transform U.S.-Iran relations into an alliance or a partnership, but it will transform it to something very different from the institutionalized enmity that we currently are seeing.
Trita Parsi is the founder and current president of the National Iranian American Council. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And that interview by VOA's William Gallo. Well, Andrew Palchevsky, our social media editor, is joining me now. So, Andrew, what is the reaction on social media to this Iranian nuclear deal?
Well, the reaction's coming from all over. We have the White House sending out President Obama's announcement early this morning with the quote, "I believe it would be irresponsible to walk away from this deal," from the president. President Rouhani of Iran actually was live tweeting his announcement. They were tweeting out his statements as he was making them. But the tweet early this morning from him, retweeted over 1,300 times so far, says, "Iran deal shows constructive engagement works. With this unnecessary crisis resolved, new horizons emerge with a focus on shared challenges." And then Secretary of State John Kerry tweeting out again early this morning, "Agreement is a step away from the specter of conflict towards possibility of peace. This is the good deal we have sought." So positive news from across the board from the negotiators. Among the public, the news is more mixed. You have people saying this is a historic deal, it's hopeful, it's game changer. Other people saying it's foolish or a disaster. And the two terms that are trending, at least in the U.S., one is Obama's Iran, and it's Obama's Iran deal. When people use a phrase frequently on Twitter, it'll pop up as a trending topic. So people are saying Obama's Iran deal does this, or Obama's Iran deal will do that. And usually, in most cases I've seen this morning, it's been used negatively. Obama's Iran deal will make us less safe, or Obama's Iran deal will ruin relations with people overseas, with their allies overseas. Another trending topic is the word historic. Many people have been using this word. It's a historic deal. It's a great day for the U.S., Iran, and all of our allies. But as Jeff just talked about, historic mistake, that's the term that Benjamin Netanyahu had talked about. So that was the term that we're seeing pop up, is historic mistake, from his quote, from his remarks. But opinions all across the board, we're now having congressional members of Congress weigh in. We're talking about whether or not this deal can get through the U.S. Congress, whether it'll face Republican support or opposition. So it's a lot of different moving parts, certainly, as we're looking through this deal and kind of the early stages still.
All right. Well, thanks very much. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Watching a movie or TV show in 3D can make you feel that you're part of the on-screen action. But some viewers say that 3D movies make them sick and complain of eye strain, disorientation, or motion sickness. Scientists wanted to find out if 3D programs can produce possibly dangerous or even life-threatening side effects in viewers. So they gathered 433 volunteers between the ages of 4 and 82. They put their volunteers through a variety of coordination tests that were administered before and after watching both 3D and 2D versions of the hit movie Toy Story.
To infinity and beyond!
Some of the 3D viewing participants did report symptoms like eye strain and dizziness, but data from motion measurement devices they wore did not indicate any real difference between their coordination and those who didn't report any unpleasant effects. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, the Grateful Dead say goodbye. Well, as the Muslim holy month of Ramadan draws to a close later this week, there's a community east of Los Angeles which is trying to reach out to non-Muslims and show them what international news is not saying about their faith. Elizabeth Lee has this report from Chino, California.
The month of Ramadan is a time when Muslims fast and focus on God. And in the town of Chino, at the Bethel Hamid Mosque, it is also a time when Muslims and some non-Muslims find themselves in a similar plight, says Chino Police Chief Karen Comstock.
We as law enforcement professionals share in your same plight. You're watching the secular media tell you a story about law enforcement and policing that I'm telling you is wrong. There are men and women in this police, in this profession, which I love so much, that are performing with a high degree of professionalism and accuracy and protecting the very community you live in.
Similar to media coverage of over-policing in the United States, many Muslims, including Ahmadiyya Muslim Community Los Angeles East Chapter President Asin Mahmoud Khan, say news of Islamic extremists in the Middle East and around the world does not reflect who they are.
You hear a lot in the news about ISIL or ISIS and what's going on in the Middle East. It's just terrible, and we hear this in the news every day. And it's very similar to what happened post 9/11 with what was going on with Al-Qaeda, where you had this juxtaposition. You had those who claimed to be Muslim doing the most heinous acts and proclaiming the name of Allah and the name of the Holy Prophet and doing such horrible things. And then you have a community like ours.
The Ahmadiyya Muslim community, unlike most Muslims, believes its Messiah arrived in the 19th century. A few years ago, the Ahmadiyya Muslim community started a campaign in the U.S. called Muslims for Loyalty. Khan says its message is, a devout Muslim can also be a loyal American.
Is a way for us to reach out to the communities around the world and show that as Muslims, we're also loyal to our nation.
The imam of the Bethel Hamid Mosque, Mohammed Zafarullah, says Islam is a religion of peace, but that extremists tarnish his faith.
Those people who are doing all these kind of things, they say they are Muslim, but according to our religion, they are not a real Muslim, because that is that they have their own agenda, which they are using the name of the religion.
Some Muslims here say they are concerned some of the younger generation in other parts of the world may be affected by extremism.
The only way to counter this negative image that may be conveyed to the young people is for our own youth to engage in setting the record straight.
This Ahmadiyya Muslim community says, for the record, their faith is one of love, loyalty, and peace. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Chino, California.
This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
This is International Edition. The Grateful Dead recently played its last three shows ever at Chicago's Soldier Field. International Edition's David Byrd sits down with Ray McDonald to talk about it.
Ray, this was really something. These were 3 days in a row and three shows in a row and three sellouts, right?
Three sold-out shows at Soldier Field in Chicago. And it was no accident the Dead played their final shows there, because it was at Soldier Field in July 1995 when guitarist Jerry Garcia gave his final concert. He died 1 month later.
Now, these shows featured some of their greatest hits. It featured some of their songs that people might not have heard in a while, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Dead really went back to their early psychedelic days for a few of their numbers. I mean, this was the Dead playing for its core constituency, the longtime Deadheads, the people who had been with them maybe right from the very beginning in the 1960s. So they got pretty adventurous, and then they played some of their better-known hits as well.
Chuckin'. Got my chips cashed in, keep trucking like the dude of man. Together, more or less in line, just keep trucking home, home, home.
Now, the thing about the people called the Deadheads, they will have bootlegs of concerts that they've been to. Sometimes they're very devoted followers. They go from show to show to show to show to show. But that's all come to an end now.
Supposedly it's come to an end. And one thing I should say about the Deadheads is that decades before the internet existed, these people were trading information about the band. The Grateful Dead was really the first act, first big rock act I can think of, to create its own culture. And these people would travel around the country to be with them. Now, as to whether these were the final shows, that's an open question. When all is said and done, these shows may rack up more than $55 million. They set an online live event streaming record with more than 175,000 pay-per-view streams purchased. Their drummer, Bill Kreutzmann, has already said that he would like to do some East Coast shows with the so-called Core Four members. So it might be their last, and then again, it might not. The average age of the Core Four is 70. That may be working against them.
That could work against them. Of course, the Rolling Stones and the Eagles and the Doobie Brothers.
Paul McCartney, you can name exceptions.
They're all of that same generation, pretty much, and they are doing tours now. So, and the Stones, I understand, are selling out. So.
Oh, yeah.
All right, that's VOA's Ray McDonald. You know, if you have any questions or comments, you can send a tweet to VOA_music. That'll get to all of our music folks. And you can send one to VOA_IE if you want to direct it to me or anybody here on the show. Also, you can listen for Ray to count down the top 20 songs of the week and the top 5 songs of the week by logging on to our website. That's www.voanews.com.
That's the music of the Grateful Dead, and that's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.